Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Research shows us that bringing arts and the opportunity for self-expression into prisons can lower the incidence of behavioral problems with inmates and lower the recidivism rate once they're released. That means lower the rate at which they return. It's not too hard to imagine how painting or music might take place behind prison walls, but filmmaking with the cameras, the lights, and the action, and all that sophisticated editing software out there, that seems less logical. An innovative project called Pens to Pictures did just that, working with incarcerated women at the Dayton Correctional Institution to write and direct their own short films. The Wexner Center for the Arts will host a screening of the films and panel discussion on September 6th. For more information, visit the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining us now is one of the writer-director participants in Pens to Pictures, Beverly Fears. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also, the founder of Pens to Pictures, assistant professor of motion pictures at Wright State University, Chinoya Chukwu. Welcome to the show.
Hello there.
Chinoya, where did the idea for Pens to Pictures come from?
Well, I was volunteering on a case for a woman who was incarcerated in Dayton Correctional Institution, a woman named Tyra Patterson, and I was visiting her often and being a part of her team and visiting her, I looked around and I realized that Tyra has such an amazing, powerful story, and so do all the other women who are incarcerated here. And unfortunately, the majority of those stories would never leave prison walls. So I've been teaching film and screenwriting and directing and production at the collegiate level for 10 years now. And when I had the idea for this film program, I thought, well, me teaching people how to tell their own stories doesn't have to be confined to the privileged walls of a college classroom. So let's do it here.
Beverly Fears, you're a writer, director, and participant in the Pens to Pictures project. You're now out of prison, obviously. When someone makes a suggestion like Chinoye just did, what was your response at first?
At first, my response was, no way.
Why?
For one, the opportunity doesn't come to a place like that. And it just made me wonder if I could even pull something like that off.
Yeah, but you'd wanted to be a writer.
Correct.
Tell us about that part of your story.
More so, yes, I wanted to be a writer, but more so I wanted to be an actor.
Okay.
So being that all kind of flowed together gave me like the enthusiasm to go ahead and try it.
You wrote as a child about some pretty difficult things.
That's correct.
Your mom found the material and destroyed it.
Yes.
And that sort of shut you down a little bit.
Yes, it did. She wasn't aware of it, that it shut me down like that. But yeah, that was pretty heart-wrenching. I think I came home from school one day and went to go back to my writing, and it was like destroyed. It was torn to a million pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So when you had this opportunity, was this something you could sort of sign up for?
Yes. Yeah, it kind of was. Yes. When the opportunity came, my friend, Kamisha Thomas, who also wrote a film, she was the one who really like inspired me and pushed me to go forth with going ahead and writing a story.
Was it a pretty conventional type of class?
I don't think this could ever be conventional.
Okay. So for people out there who are listening,
yeah,
trying to visualize what's a class like, what's this like?
Yeah, so I'll break it down for you. So the way that it worked was that I taught an 8-week screenwriting intensive. I teach screenwriting courses at Wright State University, and so it was my screenwriting curriculum at Wright State in DCI, mm-hmm. except it was 8 weeks and not 13, 14 weeks, because the ladies, I mean, y'all knocked it out. in 8 weeks. And after that 8 week intensive, I then introduced the writer directors to their co-directors. The co-directors are community artists, community filmmakers throughout Ohio whose job is to execute the vision of the writer director. So the writer director worked very closely with the co-director throughout the many months of pre-production. And so by the time we shot the films in June, they already knew what the writer director wanted. And so I had a 1 month directing intensive after the screenwriting intensive, where we brought in professional actors from different states into the prison for the writer directors to rehearse with them, and the co-directors shadowed them. And then we had about 2-3 months of pre-production. All pre-production elements were confirmed by the writer directors in the prison. We location scouted outside of the prison. I brought in those photos inside the prison. I brought pictures of wardrobe pieces, set design pieces, every single element you can imagine. Shot lists and storyboards were created in the prison with cinematographers. We shot the films on the outside, and then we brought in a professional editor from the Wexner Center, Paul, into the prison to work with the writer directors in editing their films.
We're going to listen to a scene from Beverly Fears' film entitled The Devastating Game. We see a flashback to when the sexual abuse of the main character, Nikki, by her brother Joe, her older brother Joe, began. Is there anything you want to say about it before we get started, Beverly?
No, I'll let it speak for itself.
Let it speak for itself. Okay, let's listen.
Hey, you want to play a game? Now, if you say yes, you have to do it no matter what. Okay. The game is called Dead Man's Lair. You have to pretend you're dead, and no matter what I do, you're still dead, okay? No?
I don't know.
Nope, you already pinky swear.
Beverly, The Devastating Game is a series of flashbacks back and forth between at one point in her life, and it begins. The Devastating Game has lots of double entendre. There's a lot of nuance to that. It starts with her brother being abused himself as a young boy. How did you settle on this topic this way?
Actually, it was probably through the weeks of writing in the course of Miss Chinoyu.
Wow. Chinoyu, yes. I've got this down.
Yes. It was just through the weeks of writing and editing over and over again that, I don't know, it just came to pass.
Is it what you started out with? You know, I always call it like, you know, as a writer, just kind of like, you know, a lot of times you write, and maybe you have a paragraph that's the keeper. Mm-hmm. Is it what you started out with? Is it the essence that you were searching for? Because it is a short film, and these are all short films.
No, it's not what I started out with. It actually got deeper and deeper. It originally started out with like being told from the view of as if a fly was watching everything that happened. But then it just got deeper. The class really just taught me to break down the walls and to just get in there.
You know, I had a writing teacher one time, a coach, say, "This is not therapy. This is not therapy. This is not therapy." And of course, we all used this particular writing assignment then as therapy. They were pretty personal. Is that what you're shooting for, or how do you talk about how much these students of yours, Chinoyu, in a prison with lots of issues that surrounded them on the way there? How do you approach that?
A couple different ways. I mean, before I walk into that space, I have to really interrogate the different kinds of privileges that I myself embody, and really be clear about how much space I take up, and make sure that I challenge that as much as possible before even walking into DCI, and being transparent about that when I'm amongst the group. And the other thing is, we started a lot of our classes with positive affirmations.
Okay.
And those affirmations were us reaffirming our worth and unapologetically standing in our power and our humanity. And the reason I started it out that way was because of the space that we're in and just us being women in the world. There are institutions and there are people and spaces that are more comfortable with our oppression than our empowerment. And so I really wanted us to create spaces, the space every week as a way for us to reclaim our power. And I think that and Beverly, you could speak to this as well and let me know if this is how you felt. But I felt over the year, we doing so created a safe space for us to be vulnerable and vulnerable in terms of the way we talk to each other and vulnerable in our writing.
Yeah, you're there with your other fellow inmates. I mean, that's a whole nother relationship. Mm-hmm. Beverly, how did that go?
It actually went really well. Me and a lot of the ladies, we were already friends or associates. So that made it easier to be vulnerable. And there was a safe space created for us there where we could talk to each other, where we could cry, where we could just be us and not worry about our confinement.
You know, it's you with friends, you always think the best of your friends anyways, or they wouldn't be friends, right? But I'm wondering, and you always, what you thought about what your friends produced from this project. We can't have everybody on the show, but were you surprised? Were you, how did it make you feel? What did you think?
I was really impressed with each film. I guess I learned things that I didn't know before, and I seen that it really took us to a space of just transparency.
Yeah, transparency in a thing is a tough thing. How is it? What about you, Chinoye? How has it changed you? How when you go back in and do another term, another semester of this, perhaps, I assume you will, you want to have this spread nationwide. How does it change what you do next time?
This experience, this journey has been one of the most transformative experiences of my life. It in so many ways. I mean, this was a perfect marriage of all the things that I'm so deeply passionate about, teaching and art and activism. This Pens to Pictures journey really rooted me in purpose. Part of my journey, my personal journey in life, has been finding and embracing my joy. And and Pens to Pictures has really shown me to be and taught me to be intentional about rooting that joy in purpose. This really revealed to me a part of my purpose, and that is helping people tell their own stories and creating spaces and opportunities for those stories to be heard. And so that really became clear to me. I've learned this experience has expanded my capacity for compassion and for love and for self-worth. Beverly and the other writer directors have literally changed my life. You've literally changed my life and made me a better person and made me a self-actualized person. And those kinds of lessons and jewels are ones that I will take forever. And so absolutely that we will have many, many, many more cycles of Pens to Pictures. This inaugural year, I don't think any of us really saw where we were going with this. We just kind of day by day, we're rolling with it. And especially now, it seems like more and more people around the country are really gravitating towards the mission of this program. And, I'm just moving in the way the universe is leading us. And I want to now go into a space of intentionality in terms of the growth of the program. And so I want it to expand throughout the country and continue some of the same formats, screenwriting and directing. And it's college level instruction. I would love. And so I really do want to stress that it's very high standards and high quality of work. And I want to keep that going.
Beverly Fears, what's next for you?
What's next for me is I'll be going to Columbus State Community College. And I also just want to look into I want to act. That's my passion and desire. And I'm going for it.
Well, good best wishes to you, and congratulations on your first short film.
Thank you.
The series of films from the Pens to Pictures Project will be screened on coming up at the Wexner Center for the Arts. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We're going to have some others who have brought self-expression and creative self-expression to the prisons and talk more about that idea. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. That music is from the Inside Out Choir at the Ohio Reformatory for Women in Marysville. They joined the Harmony Project at the Ohio Theater for a special performance last year. We're talking about how self-expression through art is being used in prisons. Still with us is the founder of Pens to Pictures. That's a project that works with incarcerated women to create short films. Chinoya Chukwu, she's an assistant professor of motion pictures at Wright State University. Joining us is theater teacher and director with the Theater of Conviction at Marion Correctional Institution and facilitator for the Ohio Prison Arts Connection, Jesse Glover. Welcome to the show, Jesse.
Thank you.
And also with us, executive director and founder of the Harmony Project, David Brown. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann.
David, how did you get from the Harmony Project to the Ohio Reformatory for Women?
Well, it's the same way we got to all of our other programs. It was about trying to take music to where it wasn't happening. And I read Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, mm-hmm. Met Karen Jones, met a few other people who said, go up and take a visit. So we went up, and as we walked into that tapestry therapeutic community and met these women, and I realized, hey, you know, I think music can have a difference in helping them with their transition through their reconnection to their social selves. And they do such great work there in working on the women with their rehabilitation. But the music helps the women kind of really connect back to their heart.
When you say reconnection to the social selves, that assumes a previous connection. And in a lot of cases,
you're right.
That's the whole problem, is they had for so many years been disconnected.
That's true. Well, so then a connection then, rather than a reconnection. I think it's a valid point. Yeah, you're right. And it's an assumption that I think is made, too, that there was just a mistake that happened, and it wasn't a whole life that led to this. So what I love is most of the women that we're working with are going to be getting out. And we see them coming out, and we see the transformation of, you know, just more confidence, they found their voice in a way, and they're able to use it now in a way that maybe they were not able to use it before. And I think that that's a combination of all of the arts programs that are going on and all of the different things that the prisons are doing. It's not just music. It's not just film. It's not just acting. It's the combination of all of these things together.
Yeah. Have you learned in Chinonye and also Jesse, chime in as far as what the prison's role in all of this was, what was it like, Chinonya, to have to get the prison to go along with this idea?
You know, I was really lucky in that the warden's assistant, Vivian Covington, was 250% on board.
Right off the bat.
Uh-huh. And the warden was very excited about this when I proposed this project to her. The warden immediately asked Vivian Covington to be there at the meeting because she was so excited about expanding art programs in DCI. And so Vivian was present, has been present to every single class, every single Pens to Pictures event. She, even before Pens to Pictures, was one of the biggest advocates of the ladies in DCI. So I was really lucky in that we had that kind of support.
And Jesse Glover, what about you?
Yes, I'd say I'm also lucky to be working in a prison, Marion Correctional Institution, that really has over time developed a culture that values programming of all different kinds. I work with a nonprofit organization called Healing Broken Circles inside the prison. Mm-hmm. They essentially run a community center that's open to anyone who is in the prison and providing all kinds of different programming from meditation to thinking about fatherhood to theater. So it's really nice to be in a context where there's sort of a culture that we can improve ourselves. We can work in community. We can solve problems together, and we can make things that are meaningful both to our community and to the broader public.
David Brown, what about you? Is this all echoing the same experience you had?
Same thing. I mean, there's a hunger there for this to come in, and because it's a breath of fresh air. Yeah, I mean, the warden that I met there the first time, Janine Trim, and then she moved on, and now it's Warden Ronnie Burks. But it was the same experience. Walked in the door, and they're like, yes. And it was just, yes, 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 bring this in.
It's such a contrast to when I was covering the Ohio General Assembly, and it was all three strikes and you're out, and take away the weightlifting rooms and take away the fun. This is supposed to be punishment. They're not supposed to be entertained and made happy. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jesse? I mean,
sure.
There have to be remnants at Marion Correctional, particularly of inmates who didn't have this kind of experience when they first arrived.
Sure. I think that there is a broad cultural assumption that people are in prison to be punished, right? But the reality is that people have to continue to live life. Some of them will be in prison for a very short time. Some of them will be in prison for a very long time, or maybe the rest of their lives. And so the value that I've seen in arts programming specifically is that it contributes to a flourishing life, right? That you can make something meaningful, that you can have an impact, that you can communicate, and you can improve your capacity to communicate. And that has value no matter what context you're living in. And I think it particularly has value if you're living in prison.
Chinoya Chukwu mentioned earlier that how it's changed her. And I know, David, you've talked about how Harmony Project has affected your life in general, but in particular, your work in the prisons. What's that like? You always look the same to me, whether I see video in the prisons. Well, that's David Brown. He's jumping around, and he's a force of nature anyways. But what about internally?
Well, number one, it made me less judgmental. I had a lot of preconceived notions before I walked in the door, as I think a lot of our volunteers do, because we take people there every week from around the community, and they walk in for the first time and walk in through a prison for the first time. And we walk in with filters, and we walk in with privilege, and we walk in with all kinds of other things attached to us that we don't even, maybe not even are aware of until we're there. But one of the things that we say at the prison all the time is the thing that has probably impacted me the most. I said it to them to give them maybe some inspiration, but it's turned around and I now apply it in my own life, that where I am doesn't define who I am, that my environment, my upbringing, my religious teachings, my things that all led me to where I am today don't define who I am. Who I am is who shows up every day. And that's what these women have to think about when we're in our program. Who we are is where we show up and how we show up every single day. And that's, I think, what has transformed me the most.
Now we're going to hear from a former prisoner at the Marysville correctional facility and also a member of the Harmony Project Choir, Melissa Canterbury. You're on the air. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. Tell us how you got involved with the choir.
Well, I was incarcerated at the Ohio Reformatory for Women. I had a mandatory sentence, had laid around for a little while trying to decide, you know, what I was going to do, how I was going to handle my prison term, and had the opportunity to join the Tapestry Therapeutic Community Unit. I get into Tapestry, start going through programming, and my first Thursday there, in comes this group of outsiders, as we would call them. They're outsiders, people from the free world. And here comes this man with just the biggest smile on his face and the most positive energy that I had really ever seen from anyone. And it was David Brown, and it was the Harmony Project Volunteers. And that's how I became involved.
Were you a singer before?
I was not. I was not. David will tell you it's not about being able to sing. It's just being able to be willing to do it.
And you're out now.
I am.
And I know
I am out now.
You can't really compare and contrast. What would life be like out if you hadn't have had the Harmony Project in your life? But could you give it a go? Tell us what you think
is
different for you. Okay.
Okay. I think there is a huge contrast to coming out and having a network and a support people behind you that you know is going to be there, that you know is going to care, that you know is just going to help you through those first few days of it's kind of tumultuous when you first leave from an incarceration. So you come out, and I relocated to a whole new community. I'm not from Columbus, but I am now. And if it wouldn't have been for the volunteers in the Harmony Project and those relationships that I had built for the 2 years that I spent incarcerated and seeing them same faces every week after week after week and knowing that David was there, you show up and, you know, you dress, you show up, and you just do it regardless of how you feel. And a lot of times coming out of a situation like being incarcerated, you have a hard time asking for help. But they made it very easy to ask for help. I remember my first contact with them. When I called over to say, hey, I'm out, I'd like to be in the big choir. Now, mind you, at that time, there was a very long waiting list. Mm-hmm. People had been waiting to get into the choir for years.
Don't you tell people I'd let you jump that wait list.
Oh, I jumped that wait list. I was here the following Monday, and it just so happened. It happened great. It was the beginning of a new season. I came in and, you know, walking into a room of people that are, you know, executives and CEOs and lawyers and doctors, and not knowing if there's going to be anyone there just like me. But it didn't matter when I walked in the room. When I walked in the room, it was like being in a place that just envelops you in just this heartwarming feeling of love and compassion. And I didn't feel any judgment, and I didn't feel awkward or out of place, although that is how I had preconceived that I was going to feel.
Yeah, well, they don't walk around with signs on them either, so you don't know who's who, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, we do. We have name tags.
Name tags.
No, but you don't know who is
who's the judge,
CEO,
who's the doctor, who's the CEO.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. No, you don't. You don't know that until you get friendly enough to conversate with people or go and have lunch and things like that. And those are things that have happened for me. I have a network of people that I would have never been exposed to in a past life. So just being able to know that, gosh, you know, this incarceration, it ended in good. It may have begun in bad and in strife and doing things and not making the best decisions, but it ended in good. And I think that really came from having them in every week. Just the songs that we sang. The songs that we sang were always something that was positive or upbeat or heartfelt and raw. Do you know what I mean?
Soulful, yeah.
Yes, very soulful. And it just created a better way for you to kind of release your self-expression. A lot of times when you're going through treatment and things like that, you don't really want to be receptive to the negatives that you have going on in your life.
You know,
the music. Go ahead.
No, you kind of made me think of something though that I want to ask before I forget. And David and Chinoya and Jesse, tell me what you think about this, is when you kind of save somebody in this way, you know, when they say when you save somebody's life, then you are responsible for that life in a way. How do you feel about that idea? This is an extension of Harmony Project now. This is the scaffolding's going up now and building something bigger than Harmony. These are people coming out, getting out, and they're going to turn to Harmony Project.
And they do. I want to make sure, though, that I mean, I don't feel like that we've saved anybody's life.
Okay.
And so that, just to make that clear.
All right.
Nor do I think it's our job to do that.
Okay.
I think it's our job to go in and provide the service that we provide. And then if it's received and if it's employed, that's beneficial. And then on the other side of it, when they get out, Melissa could tell you, I could tell you, the warden would tell you. I mean, Melissa's one of the success stories. Melissa's one of the people working the program and doing what she needs to do. Mm-hmm. And she's out there and she's giving back. She's working with other women. There are other women who've gotten out, who have skipped out on their programs and are now, you know, running from the law. And these are women that we loved and cared about and we hoped were going to be incredibly successful. But they're in that position now. We want to be there for them, too. I mean, we're not turning our backs on them because of that. But I think that what you're talking about, the scaffolding that's going up, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes, Anne, you just say yes because you're in the world of creativity and art. And you look and you see a need and you see where you can plug that and you can fill in. And you don't know how it's going to be funded. You don't know what the long term is going to be. But you know that there's somebody in front of you right now who's going to benefit from the work. And so you just say yes and you go and you build the scaffolding as you go. Mm-hmm. And you don't necessarily know where it's all going to end up, but you just keep plugging along and doing it anyway.
Chinoya?
Yeah, I mean,
you were nodding your head when he says, by the way, we're not saving people. Yeah.
The intention is not to save or give voice. You know, it's to empower and to support and to humanize regardless, right. You know, and I think it's to do that for the individuals that we're in contact with in the present moment, but to also kind of create this larger kind of goal of society humanizing people, regardless if they're the success story or the people who are not the what society would consider a success story, they're still human.
Right.
And that's my thing. Right. Let's see the humanity in people regardless.
That's right. Yeah, I just want to amen everything that both of you are saying and only add that the sort of first identity I carry into the room is that of artist, right? That I'm an artist working alongside other people. And the thing that I've seen happen over and over again, whether it's building like a rehearsal space or a classroom, is that the guys I work with rise to the level of the expectations in the room, right? If they're, you know, we have a deadline and we're working towards something, we need to make something better. We rise to the level and do that. And I think that is what's crucial. And I think connected to what Chinoya was saying about the human being, that these are human beings who want to create, who want to make something meaningful, and they want to do it together. They're curious and brave. And what I have seen in my own life and in the people who've been exposed to the work we've created has been that sort of greater awareness of the human potential for creation and even transformation of hearts and minds.
Melissa Canterbury?
Yes.
What do you think?
I know that I'm just very grateful for that scaffolding. Very grateful. I have to say that the program and the people just make my days better, really, with not having anything before. And along the lines of the people that are, you know, they would consider me a success for it. I don't see myself that way. I see myself as just, I've been given these opportunities and I've just taken advantage of them. That's it. I've just worked on them. Because you can lay an opportunity in front of someone, but it's not going to work unless they're willing to take it. Mm-hmm. Unless they're willing to do some footwork for that. And it's heartbreaking for the ladies that just kind of don't make it. And then you just kind of pray and you just say, hey, you know what? Let's hope that they eventually do make it.
So. Melissa Canterbury, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
You bet. We're going to continue our conversation about the creative expression in the prisons, why it matters, what it brings. We're also going to talk about the newly formed Ohio Prison Arts Connection. So stay with us. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about The use of creative self-expression in the prisons. Still with us is the founder of Pens to Pictures. That's a project that works with incarcerated women to create short films. Chinoya Chukwu is an assistant professor of motion pictures at Wright State University. She founded it, and there's a series of films from the Pens to Pictures project that will be screened at the Wexner Center for the Arts. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. I have seen a few of them, and they are really cool. They're super fantastic. Chinoya, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Also with us, Jessie Glover. She's a theater teacher and director with the Theater of Conviction at Marion Correctional Institution and a facilitator for the Ohio Prison Arts Connection. Thanks to you as well, Jessie.
Thank you, Anne.
And David Brown, executive director and founder of the Harmony Project. David, thanks again.
How long
has the Harmony Project been around?
We're in our 8th year now.
Oh, it's 8 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Gosh, it's flown by.
Yeah.
Wow. But it's about when I started the show.
Oh, is it? That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Just about 8 years ago. Jessie Glover, tell us about the Ohio Prison Arts Connection. What is that? What's different there?
Sure. Well, it came out of a number of conversations I was having about the amount of work that's happening in prisons, both here in Ohio and also other places in the United States, of making sure that arts work is possible in prisons. But I was noticing that in Ohio, there was very little connection or contact between different programs, sometimes even in the same prison. There would be two things happening and they wouldn't know each other existed. Part of that is the nature of prisons. Part of that is the size of our state. And so I've been working alongside teaching artists, some nonprofit advocates, and some other folks, some folks from the Ohio Arts Council, namely to start to imagine a coalition of people all around the state who make art programming possible in Ohio prisons. And that includes artists coming in from outside. That includes people who are on staff in prisons who are advocates and champions for this program, like Chinoya's work with Vivian Covington at DCI. And that also includes people who are incarcerated themselves, who are making art, teaching art, making space for art in their lives inside of prison. And so the hope is that we can connect, that we can find ways to collaborate and problem solve, and that we can also begin to amplify our stories so that we have a bigger impact on how the public sees the power of the arts, specifically the power of the arts in prisons, and how the state of Ohio might conceive of the arts' role in the work that they do in the carceral system.
You're part of Healing Broken Circles.
Yes.
You're not paid by the state.
That's right.
None of you are paid by the state to do any of this work.
Yes.
Does the state have a role to play in funding more of this?
Yes.
Yes. David
yes.
Brown.
Yeah. I think
I mean,
that's
they're overcrowded. They're way beyond capacity. They're overwhelmed on some levels. Yeah. It's a huge fixed budget as it is.
And the reality is that the arts are cheap. The arts, compared to lots of interventions, the arts come with a relatively low overhead and a relatively high output in terms of impact on people's work ethic, capacity to communicate and problem solve, capacity to toward self-expression, toward self-observation. And so I think you're right. At this time, though, the work that's happening in prisons is happening because dedicated people are either volunteering their time or leveraging their connections in order to get into prisons and create some space for arts programming. That said, I do think the state has a role. I think the public has a role in making sure
the state
that
the is
work
the public,
continues.
Right.
Yes, that's right.
Chinoya, you want to take your program nationwide eventually. You're working on that. That's going to require some fixed funds from inside the system, not just volunteers from outside the system. How do you get compensated for what you're doing, or are you not?
Well, the inaugural year of Pens to Pictures was largely funded by my credit card.
Okay. Thank you very much, MasterCard and Visa.
But once I was able to show something tangible, then I was able to apply for grants. And thankfully, I'm starting to receive some grants. But also, there are a variety of organizations and institutions who are especially interested in collaborating. I mean, one of the things that I'm really looking into is partnering with different universities and colleges. So most of the crew members on this for the films this inaugural year were film students or former okay. film students. And I mean, for the premiere screening of the films that we had in DCI, I brought my class to it, to the prison to watch the films. There's something there that's very pedagogically interesting and critical in that kind of in merging those kinds of worlds and really allowing my students to root what they're learning in my classroom in something greater than themselves and seeing themselves as community members and they are part, the women who are incarcerated in DCI are part of the community. My students are a part of the community, and we are all connected. And so I really am interested in exploring that some more as I think about expanding Pens to Pictures and how we can partner with different universities and colleges and of course, different correctional facilities and
And I want to just add that colleges and universities around the state are key partners in doing this work, whether
but
it be
is it the
state
arts
or...
is it the arts departments or is it the art department in conjunction with criminal justice departments?
You know, it's a combination.
Okay.
The art departments, it's a great opportunity for collaboration
yeah.
between criminal justice, sociology departments,
social work,
and arts departments,
yeah.
but also at the institutional level. I one of the institutions I'm affiliated with is Otterbein University, where I teach. And Otterbein has made a commitment to offering a few courses for college credit inside of the prison. And so I'm the course I teach
theater
in theater
courses.
Is one of those
okay.
courses. And so the role of the university and the college in supporting folks and making it possible for work to continue in all kinds of different ways.
And one of the
experiments, allowing people to experiment a little bit.
And one of the things I would love to do, looking forward with Pens to Pictures, is seeing how this Pens to Pictures curriculum could lead to a certificate of some sort that the participants can use towards college credit. You
right.
know, so there are a lot of different ways
right.
that we can expand.
Yeah. That's right,
David.
Well, I was going to say back to your question about should the state, you know, be funding.
Mm-hmm.
Because I jumped in with a big yes,
mm-hmm.
and I do believe they should. But I also believe that there are sometimes strings attached. And, you know, we've been told before, you guys are able to get away with some things that we wouldn't be able to get away with because you're not funded by us. I mean, there are all the rules that everybody has to abide mm-hmm. by once we walk through the fence. But I think that the more that we can get our leadership at tables and hear that this isn't about us redeeming unworthy or sinful bad people. That's not what this is about. That's why they say we don't need to fund that. You know? This is about us understanding that I'm you, you're me. We are all in this. We are all somehow connected in this. And if you rise, I'm going to rise with you. If your voice becomes stronger, my voice is going to become stronger. And that's the whole purpose of, I think, everything that we're all doing. And so, of course, they should be funding that. The women that I work with, you know, religion plays a big part in a lot of prisons. It's something to hold on to. The faith is something for them to hold on to. And there's an old scripture from the New Testament. You know, I was raised a Southern Baptist, so I'm going to bring it up somehow, although I don't identify with it anymore. And it talks about, you know, that you reap what you sow. And that was taught to us to be kind of like a finger pointy kind of thing. And the project that we're trying to work on right now that we've been building is called Reap Sow. But it's that what you're reaping while you're in the prison is what you're going to sow back into the community when you come out. And if you are reaping creativity and dignity and integrity and people treating you like a human being, you're going to walk out of those doors knowing how to expect that treatment of yourself and how to give it to others as well. So we want to flip that finger-pointy thing and turn it back around to where it's not about judging. It's about saying, of course you're worthy. Of course you should have every opportunity that everybody else should have. We should all have access to the exact same things. And so that's our goal, is to try to give our women that we work with the exact same opportunities that anyone else would have.
You know, in Harmony Project's an unusual situation, maybe in contrast to what you guys are actually doing, because you do have judges and, you know, CEOs and that kind of thing who are at the front lines of what you do, mixed in there with everybody else.
Who are going in now, right, and speaking to those women and giving them jobs and working and writing classes with them because their minds have shifted. Like mine did. We were talking on the way in. The first request of me was to go into a men's prison. Now, I won't tell you what we talked about on the way in because it's not good for your users' ears. But I will say this. I had my own conceptions about what it was going to be, and I was afraid to go into a men's prison. So I was like, let me start with a women's prison. Well, I mean, I'm not proud of the fact that I had my own misconceptions, but I'm glad that I wound up at ORW because I have fallen in love with this community there, and it's a part of my life, and I'm a part of their lives, and you know, they care about my boys and my boys ask about them. And we're all kind of in this one big kind of mess together at times that we don't know where it's going, but we're in it anyway.
Deborah in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I just wanted to say that, you know what, I'm proud of her. The things that she's doing with art and the incarcerated, keep doing it, but she should really be in government writing social policy.
Do you know Chinua? No, I don't.
I am an African American woman, mother of three, and she just hit home when she, you know, spoke. But the art and the incarcerated will help to maybe, you know, the stuff that they go through behind bars is a lot of times inhumane. And they can retouch with humanity through art. I know it can, you know, it's a far stretch, but it's something. Everybody needs something, you know, to get them through.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
I mean, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say thanks for calling, but did you want to add something?
No, and the gentleman that just spoke, I appreciate him as well. And even though he kind of came upon the women in the women's prison, you know, out of his fear from going to the mail, hopefully he does extend his gifts and his talents and services to the mail prisons as well. And that's all I have to say.
All right, Deborah, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks. Well, we're just about out of time, but I'm just wondering what sort of access the public has to the sort of stuff that you're creating at Marion Correctional, Jesse.
That's a great
question. You know, we know that there's this film series that's going to be available at Wexner coming up in the next week or so. But what about everyday people who want to?
That's great. One of our most recent projects was an adaptation of Hamlet that was made available not only to an inside audience, but also to an outside audience. That's a real commitment in our program to make sure not only that there's an opportunity to grow skill and craft, but that the work that they're doing has an opportunity to impact people on the outside and how they might view people in prison, men in prison specifically. So, through all of the programs that we do with Theater of Conviction or Healing Broken Circles, there's a public component, a public audience opportunity. And it's really in that experience that the public has with people creating artwork inside of a prison, I think, that has the opportunity to create change and the opportunity to even converse with people who are in that process is really, really powerful from my observation.
Thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That's Jesse Glover. She's a theater teacher and director with the Theater of Conviction at Marion Correctional Institution and a facilitator for the Ohio Prison Arts Connection. Chinoye Chukwu, founder of Pens to Pictures and assistant professor of motion pictures at Wright State University. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you so much.
By the way, a series of films from the Pens to Pictures project will be screened coming up next week at Wexner Center for the Arts. So for more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And David Brown, as always, thank you so much for your time. David is the executive director and founder of the Harmony Project. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.